Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry.
This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue.
The purpose of the Bible on Trial, as created by Rich Humpel, is to compare the current beliefs of Christianity to the actual words and teachings of Jesus Christ as he gave them to his own eyewitness disciples, and then discover if there are any differences.
Oh Lord, you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door.
Now join the Spirit of Truth Ministry team for an eye-opening hour of investigation as we search for truth by putting the Bible on trial. Hello, everyone. This is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here with the Spirit of Truth Ministry research team, and this is the Bible on Trial. Today is June 26, 2015, and we are delighted that you have taken some time out of your busy schedule, either live here with us right now or via MP3 download from our website, to study with us to learn what is the real truth. Oh, yes, and also we're on iTunes. You can go there. All of this is downloaded on iTunes. We are going to have our get our study started here in just a minute, but I want to call your attention to our chat page. On the chat, I will be monitoring chat today like I do most of the time. And if you have any questions or comments that you'd like to chat with me about, you go ahead. We also have our WordPress website listed at and linked on our chat room. It is at spiritoftruthministry.net. You can go there for all sorts of good reading, including a new paper that was put on last week called The Grand Plan by Rick Sterling. And it is a really very very good article and very well written, and I think that you would enjoy that. We also have a book that is available to you on that same website. The book is called The Spirit of the Church. It literally is the primer for our ministry, and you can, it's not a very difficult read. You can read it in a few hours, and it would be worth your time to do that as well. This book was published in 2007 by Tate Publishing, and it is written by Rick Sterling and me, and we hope that you will go and take a look at that and refer your friends to it as well. Let's have prayer, and we'll start out here. Father in heaven, thank you for another new day in which we can spend some time to get to know you and your heart and your mind. Our desire is that your mind be in us. And I pray that as we go through this study, that the Holy Spirit, the true teacher, will be with us so that we can understand what you really need from us to be of service to the kingdom of heaven here on this earth. And eventually, the service to the world. And I pray this, Father, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Suzette.
Morning.
You want to greet
Linda? Oh, good morning, Linda.
Yeah.
Glad to see you with us today.
That's right. And then across from me, looking very dapper.
Is that what he is?
Yeah, I'm just looking at this hair, the quality of hair at his age. He just had a birthday recently, and that was,
older and wiser.
Well, at least older. And I'm slightly envious of his hairstyle. Of course, I'm slightly envious of anyone's hairstyle.
I like that picture you posted.
Oh, yeah, that is a nice picture. My son took that. Yeah. That's a good picture. Good morning, Rick.
How are you, Dennis?
You know, I am pretty darn good for someone of my age and temperament. And it's not the age that's the issue.
Exactly.
And just by way of a little bit of get to know us better, this last week I have come to a couple of different conclusions about where I am in my life. I am 16 years old. I'm a couple years older than Rick. And I had a doctor visit. And I had blood work and I had all that stuff, my wellness check. And, you know, there comes a time in your life when you have to make a decision about things. And I've made a few decisions about things this last week. Turns out, as of a week ago today, I've actually, because of these changes, I've lost 4 pounds. And I'm going to keep that off. I'm going to get back down to my nominal fighting weight, which is 175. I have another, I have another 8 pounds or so to go, which isn't bad for some, again, someone of my age and temperament. And I'm going to relate this to what we do here. We will take our physical health more seriously than we will take our spiritual health.
Oh, yeah.
I have loads and loads of friends who spend hours each day functioning inside their physical world, trying to eat right and getting enough exercise and getting enough sleep. That has been a real problem.
I have a question, Dennis.
Yes, go ahead.
Do people just naturally and normally know what they need to do to be healthy?
No.
No, they have no clue.
No, no, no. And see, that's what I'm getting to. You're right. Exactly. That's the crux of where I'm going. See, he is so good at this.
I know.
Okay. The point about this is that for me is that I have lived in an environment, a religious environment that spends a lot of time thinking about health and trying to live a healthy lifestyle. I was reared in a church where this health message was a very important part of their...
Very restrictive.
And very, very restrictive. And none of it mattered. After a while, you become immune to it.
Well, I say numb.
Numb, yeah.
That's a good word.
You, numb, exactly. It's like being drunk. You can't, I'm so drunk I can't feel my lips. Oh, boy, then you're drunk, okay? Which I've never been, by the way. My son still can't believe that because I went through college in the 60s. He says, I can't believe that you've never done any of this stuff. So this last Monday, I went and saw my healthcare provider, he's actually a friend of mine.
Why?
Why he's a friend?
Why didn't you just figure it out for yourself?
Well, I could, but you see, I'll put it personally. I'm not going to say what you're going to do. I'll say what I did. I just forgot.
Who did you go see? You said healthcare provider. Who?
Healthcare professional. Physician? My primary physician.
Okay.
Your physician.
Right.
Why did you go see your physician? Why didn't you go next door and talk to your neighbor?
Because
talk to me.
I get well.
Or better yet, Dennis, talk to yourself.
Well, okay.
He's going somewhere.
Well, no, and see, I know where he's going because I had every opportunity to talk to myself. When I went to the local Carl's Jr. and had one of their big old burgers with a chocolate malt on the side.
And fries.
You see what I'm saying?
Wasn't you talking to yourself. That was your meal talking to you.
That was a meal. You know, you get frustrated with teaching and, you know, the kids are, you need comfort. You need something going on. I survived today, so I need a reward.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I would go there and it has come up to bite me.
Sure does.
Now.
So what did you do about it?
I went and had all of my blood work done.
No, wait a minute.
When you had
indigestion.
Uh huh. Yeah.
What did you do about it?
Well, in that case, I took some calcium. calcium pill.
You took a calcium pill?
Well, you know.
Why did you take a calcium pill?
Like a Rolaids. You know,
okay, so why did you take a Rolaid?
You try to get rid of the...
Why did you take a Rolaid as opposed to a mint?
A mint? Because a mint wouldn't do anything. As a matter of fact, having gone to my, just recently, a couple weeks ago, gone to my cardiologist, he re-upped my...
Why do you go to a cardiologist?
Because I've had a heart attack and I needed to...
How do you know you had a heart attack?
How do I know? Because you told me. You were right there. You were right there. What are you doing?
Well, why did you believe me?
Because I had an elephant sitting on my chest.
Okay, well, so it was an elephant. What do I know?
You are a cardiac cath lab nurse, and you came down and you looked at me and said, oh, we'll take care of it. Come on, let's go.
But, Dennis, you could have sat there by yourself right there in the living room and had a discussion with yourself and figured it all out for yourself and what you needed to do about it and what you continue to need to do about it.
Right, and I couldn't have done anything about it because I would have died right there. You see, what I am
How do you know that?
Because if I hadn't have gotten to the hospital when I did, both cardiac cath lab rooms would have been full. There was no surgeon that was within a half hour of being able to come in and crack my chest, and I would have sat there in the ER and just died right there.
So, Dennis, what you're saying is that it was due to information and the availability of those who had the information, which you needed desperately.
Right.
That there was a successful and a good outcome.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. And now I went to the doctor. I saw my lab results. I showed them to you this morning. We've talked about it. And I know what I've already started. And part of that has been the result of that has been I've lost 4 pounds this week. I have started doing the things again, and I've known about this. You see, this is not something that has been out of my realm.
How did you know about it?
Because I've done it before.
You've done it before? So you actually did figure it out yourself.
Well, I didn't figure it out then either by myself. I had to be told by an expert that says...
How did the expert become an expert?
Because...
And how did you know?
How did I know?
I mean, can't you just go next door and talk to your neighbor and your neighbor and you together can kind of figure out what you need to do?
I suppose you could. If you don't want to live through it, you see.
So, Dennis, what you're saying is someone who has been educated with the information that has demonstrated effectiveness,
yes,
truthfulness,
right,
that if you go to that person who has that information, which you need, which is life-saving for
exactly.
you, that would be the most important thing for you than for you to try and figure it out yourself
exactly.
or to go to your neighbor and
right.
Say, what do I need to do?
And that's where I'm going with this. I went to the people who are able to reconfirm and tell me new stuff and say, you got to get back to the old stuff. You were doing this before. You need to go back to that. Or here's brand new stuff and here's what you need to do with it. I needed a kick in the butt. I needed somebody to tell me, look, this level's too high, this level's too low. We need to get this level up. We need to get that level down. You need to do some things. Now, they did not tell me, and this is my point, they did not tell me, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be safe because God loves you and he will see to it that you are saved from this. His grace will cover you in this. You don't have to do anything about it. All you have to do is acknowledge it. All you have to do is acknowledge, I am not as healthy as I need to be. As soon as you acknowledge that, you become more healthy. Nobody that I know would believe me if I told them that. Not one person that I could talk to about my experience with my health or their experience with their health. I mean, I've been through two fairly, one of them was a major cancer surgery for malignant melanoma, but I've had two battles with malignant melanoma. I've killed them both. I've crushed them both. I'm not a cancer survivor. I'm a crusher. I beat that back with a stick. If they had told me, well, don't worry about the melanoma in your neck. We'll just take you down to this.
But what if they told you that it wasn't a melanoma in your neck?
And it was? Then they would have killed me. I would be dead.
Well,
or if
you would have killed yourself, in essence, because you would have listened to them.
Right. They could have told me, oh, you know, I have this place in Georgia. You need to go down and get a cleanse. And they'll clean you out. And they'll give you all these herbs. And you can take those. And this will kill your cancer. I could have done that, you see. But I chose to do the hard thing. I made the hard decision. I battled it back.
You chose to follow the instructions of those who have already done it before.
Right, exactly.
And know what they're dealing with and know how
to deal,
to
with,
deal
it.
With it.
Why don't we do this very same thing?
See, it's the same reason that you don't go to a computer programmer and tell them you're having a heart attack. Can they please do a PCI on you so that you won't die?
Right.
And what is the computer programmer going to do?
Yeah.
He's going to get on the
phone.
Well,
I can program some software that'll give instructions on that, but I myself can't do that.
Ain't going to help you inside, Denny.
What is it about human beings that make us as a structure, the human family, mm-hmm. so arrogant that we think that we don't need help?
It's called preference and preferential bias.
Absolutely.
You see, if you ask most people if they knew what they needed to do to be forever young and to live forever, forever young, mm-hmm. and to be able to do what they really love, what gives them the greatest enjoyment and satisfaction, and to be able to do that forever. How many people do you think would say, sign me up? Definitely, I'm there.
They'd probably be standing in line.
So then you say, okay, here are the instructions that you must follow to the letter in order to have all of that.
And by the way, some of what I was told by my doctor, I already knew. Some of it I didn't. All of it being reminded, he reminded me that he can't do any of this for me. He can tell me about it, but I'm the one that has to get out there and do it.
You're responsible.
The doctor, he or she, will put in front of you a paper. And on the top of the paper, it says, informed consent.
Right.
And the doctor goes through the whole procedure, the bad things that can happen, and the good things that can happen. And then you can decide, based upon the information, because that's why it's called an informed consent, whether you want to have that procedure performed on you. What is the most important part of that informed consent that everyone wants to know before they sign their name and give permission to have that performed on them?
What are the risks?
What are the risks and what? But more importantly than the risk,
what is the reward?
What is the outcome?
Yes, risk.
What is the outcome? What is the expected outcome? And then you weigh the risks against the expected outcome. Most people, depending upon how desperately they want that outcome, will take a look and say, if the risks are too high, then I would rather not go through with this procedure because I want that outcome, but not bad enough to put myself in a high risk state. Although most people will go with the expected outcome, no matter how high the risks are. And this is true with life. Life. What is life? Say that if you're alive, you have life. No. If you're alive, you're not dead. But if you're alive, do you have life? And maybe I could define that with one word a little bit better. You know, I have worked in healthcare most of my life. When I was 22 or 23. I started out as a, well, what they called an orderly. It was a male nurse's aide. And then I did house float orderly in acute care hospital. I also worked a little bit in a convalescent hospital, what was a nightmare that I just assumed not revisit. And then I went through college and got my nursing degree, passed my state boards, and received my registered nurse certificate license. And I have worked for 40 years now as a registered nurse. Either an intern permit, and then when I passed my boards, an RN. I know about healthcare. And I know that when someone is going to have a procedure or a surgery or a therapy, whatever it may be, they want to know not just about their life afterwards, but their quality of life afterwards. So if you're interested in quality of life, then you understand that that is not, that has nothing to do with being alive. Oh, yes, you need to be alive to have a quality of life. But quality of life, it depends upon whether you're alive or dead. But quality of life is what do you do? As you are, yes, alive, but what kind of life do you have? Are you relegated to a wheelchair? Are you in bed on a ventilator, being fed through tubes and hooked up to a monitor and having a machine breathe for you, or taking medication every day just to stay alive.
I know about that.
But no quality of life. You can't do what you really enjoy because you get so short of breath just walking across your small living room that you would never think of going out your front door and walking down to the end of the block. You might not make it back home. See, quality of life is what you need to consider when you are alive.
When I was diagnosed the second time with malignant melanoma, subsurface in one of my lymph nodes, right side of my neck, there is something I did not tell my lovely and gracious wife after my conversation with the surgeon. He said, the outcome of this, and I asked him just exactly what you were saying. He says, we're going to have to do surgery on your right neck. And it's called a complete right neck resection. And he said, here is...
Or a radical
a
right
radical,
neck.
A radical right neck resection. They were going to take every single muscle and every single lymph node out of the right side of my neck. My head would have been flopping around like a fish. I would have been in a collar. I would have been drooling. I would not have been able to swallow. I would not have been able to speak. I would not have been able at all to use my right arm. My right arm would have been essentially gone. And he said, the chances of this occurring are greater than 80% because of the location of this cancer. I did not tell Becky that. My kids were still young enough for me to say, you know, I want to see my kids graduate from high school. My daughter, I want to see my son graduate from college. I don't want to live like this, but I'm willing to live like this to be there for them as long as what I have to deal with is not going to diminish their life. And I made the decision, and I knew Becky would, I knew what she was going to say anyway. You know, I want you alive rather than dead, so let's just go. I made the decision. I went into surgery knowing that when I woke up, I would be mutilated to the point of literally being fed by an NG tube for the rest of my life. And I woke up, I turned my head, and I said, ow. And this is at a Christian religious institution. The recovery nurse comes over to me. She looks me in the eyes and says, you are the luckiest son of a bitch I have ever seen.
What was
that
word?
Son of a bitch. She said, son of a bitch. You are the luckiest SOB I have ever met. And she said, would you like a drink of water? I said, yes. And she put a little straw in, and I took a sip of water. And she says, you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Wow.
And then she says, I'm going to have the doctor come in, and the doctor's going to tell you what happened. And folks, it literally, just as my experience with Rick in 2008, 2 years before that, I mean,
it was after that.
That was after that. Just as my experience with Rick was a complete miracle. I mean, I literally came about 15 minutes away from dying on that one. Okay? As it is, I lost a third of my heart muscle. I've gained back a lot of the function of that because I'm just stubborn. Oftentimes, the outcomes of our decisions are different than what we have been told they would be. The only way that you can clearly suggest that those outcomes are different is because there has been divine intervention. With physicians, we have physical intervention. We make a decision based on what that physical intervention is going to do to us and the quality of life that we're going to have. I went in knowing that my quality of life would be as an invalid, but I was willing to do that because I weighed the options and said, in fact, the doctor even said, look, you do have an option here. You can just let this go and we'll make you comfortable. And you'll die within 3 months, maybe. This is so progressive. It'll kill you within 3 months. 3 months to 4 months. And we'll make you really, it'll be comfortable for you. Mm. On the other hand, you're going to fight for the rest of your life if you go through with this. And I said, okay, I'll do it. Let's go. You remember, Rick, when I came out of that surgery, I did not ever think I would sing again, mm-hmm. much less talk. Mm-hmm. And I am now still, at my age, singing in a semi-professional choral group and able to speak to you in a natural voice. Why? Why is that? I took responsibility for my own disease. The doctors were assisting me in me conquering my disease. I didn't give them the responsibility to take here, you do it and it's your fault. I took responsibility for it. Why are we so reticent to do that same thing with our spiritual existence and our eternal life?
See, Dennis, that's what I'm trying to express here. The doctor told you you have a greater than 50% chance of dying in the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And you made a decision that you wanted to live. And there were several things that you did.
And there were several valid reasons, one of which was this ministry. The reason I chose to live.
Exactly. And but the thing is, you didn't just say, okay, I'm not going to have the surgery because I won't be able to talk, I won't be able to sing, I won't be able to swallow, and I'm probably going to die anyway in the next 5 months after I have the surgery.
Right. Exactly.
So what I will do is I will get on my knees and I will pray every day that I, as long as I am awake, I will be praying. And I will plead with God to heal me.
I did that anyway, but that wasn't the only thing I did.
What does God expect from us? Does God say, okay, information has been obtained through research and development to understand what works for what and what doesn't. Dennis knew, and I knew, because he talked to me about it, that surgery was a better option than not having surgery and praying for a miracle. Mm. Not that God wouldn't do the miracle.
Right.
But see, what God, I believe that God does is, He has allowed the advances in medicine and the advances in music and the advances in technology and all of those. He has allowed it. Just as He has allowed the increase in knowledge about Him. Because God has never been one to restrict, limit, or stop the advancement of knowledge, particularly the knowledge of Him. Because He knows those who learn about Him through the truth that He has been pleased to provide for anyone willing to learn it, that He will be able to accomplish what He must accomplish through the very means that it must be accomplished by, so that He can ultimately have His created world back in total under His authority. He will be the God of this world. He is not the God of this world
right
now. Mm-hmm. And the God of this world is also giving information. But the information that He is given will work, but He mixes in with that information elements that take it down a path that is one that leads to destruction and death. God knows that someone cannot just arrive at the information that they need to have in order to have eternal life through meditation and prayer alone. And Paul would have us believe otherwise. In Romans chapter 2, starting with verse 12. Sinners who were not subject to the law will perish all the same without that law. That statement right there may sound legitimate, but you need to look at it closely. It is not only a lie, it is an insidious lie. He starts out that sentence with the word sinners. It's a plural word, okay, so it's more than one. By definition, what does God call a sinner? By definition.
Wicked. Unwise.
That's not a definition, Dennis. Definition, not a word that is, you know, not, you know, a word that is same the, in other words, a sinner is wicked, evil. No, I'm not looking for that. I'm saying by definition, what does God term a sinner? Someone who is guilty of sin, correct?
Mm-hmm. I was also going to say lawless.
Well, lawless is not a sinner. You see, if you don't have a law, you can't have sin.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Because what is sin?
Breaking the law.
As it says in the King James, the transgression of the law. Right? Mm-hmm. What law?
The Ten Commandments.
And who gave the law?
Okay. The Ten Commandment law.
Some would have you believe that Satan is an anarchist. And that all of those who follow Satan are all anarchists. Now, what's anarchist? And what is anarchy?
Living without any law.
Living without any law. You're a law unto yourself. A law unto yourself. Remember that.
A law.
A law.
You are a law unto
yourself. In other words, what is right for you, and what is right for me, and what is right for Dennis, and what is right for our neighbors, and what is each one individually, by the way.
Deuteronomy 4:13 says, he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, the Ten Commandments.
So, sinners who are not subject to the law, if they're not subject to the law,
they can't be sinners.
Are they sinners?
No.
Okay, so there's a lie. Now, when it starts out as a lie, it can only go one
direction.
One direction.
Continue.
Sin is sin. But in order to be a sinner, you have to commit sin, right? In order to be subject to the penalty of the law that defines what you're doing as sin. Did you follow that?
Yes.
You need to know what that law is. You need to have the knowledge of what the law is that is the witness to your sinning.
Jesus spoke of wise and foolish. You cannot be considered foolish if you don't have something against which to be fooled.
Jesus told the religious leaders, and I can look this up in a minute, I know right where it is. He told religious leaders when they asked, are you saying we are blind to? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin.
Mm-hmm.
But since you say we see, your guilt remains.
In other words, they are already guilty because they say that they aren't, that they know the law.
What he was saying was this. You know the law. You know what the law says about murder.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know. He didn't say this to them because he knew what they were thinking. He knew. He could read their thoughts. My goodness, he could read the disciples' thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And he was forever saying, I know you're discussing this, so do you have a question about such and such? You know, and the disciples are like, we didn't tell him that. Where'd he get that? But see, he knew what they were thinking. They knew what they were thinking. And he's saying, look, you know what the law is, and you're plotting my murder. So therefore, you're willfully sinning, knowing what sin is. Therefore, you are guilty under the law that you know that you are breaking. That's what he's saying. So, a sinner who was not subject to the law will perish all the same. That is a lie. First of all, if they didn't know they were a sinner, they would not be guilty. They would have to be made aware. They would have to be given the knowledge that what they are doing is sinning, and that's why they are sinners. And he wouldn't say, okay, you're sinners, and I came here to tell you that I'm going to save you even though you're a sinner. Because here's the law. I've given you this law, and now you know that you're sinners because the law that I've given you, you are breaking. So you're sinners. And that's all you're ever going to be. But what I'm going to do is, I am going to be put to death so that the law will no longer make you guilty. Your knowledge of the law will make you guilty. So I can save you apart from the law. Oh, the law is good, and you're going to see it. You know, you're going to know it's there. But what I want you to remember is I have come to save you from the guilt of the law, so that even though you are a sinner under the law, you are saved under grace. So you are no longer under the law. The law no longer has authority over you. So this is what Paul is teaching. What does that teaching do? Does it make people carefully consider what the law is so that they can keep it?
Oh, of course not.
Because okay. Paul is very adamant about those who try to keep the law. Oh, he'll come right and say, you know, love your brother, don't go out and fornicate, and don't go out and do these other things that, you know, the pagans do. Don't do that. But hey, don't think that you have to try and keep the law, because it is an exercise in futility. You will never, ever be able to keep the law. And the Jews have demonstrated that over the last 1,500 years, is what Paul would say. And they proved that I'm right, because they couldn't keep the law. The law could not save them. So, sinners who are not subject to the law will perish all the same. How does one become, quote-unquote, subject to the law? Paul says sinners that are not subject to the law. So first of all, we know they can't be a sinner if they're not subject to the law. They can sin. But see, a sinner, in my understanding of things, is one who knows what they're doing is a sin. They will perish all the same. All the same as what? Each one will perish just as the other one perishes, who are those who are not subject to the law. And how would you, in order to have a law that you are going to be subject to, what do you need? You need to give your consent. You remember I talked about the informed consent?
Yep.
And this is where I'm going. In order to become subject to the law is the same thing, in the same process, as a patient undergoing a procedure or a therapy or a surgery. They need to be informed, first of all, of what they need to do, what the doctor is going to do, and what the expected outcome will be.
And also the expected risks.
The risks, yes. So, those who have not given consent are not subject to the law. Only those who have given their consent become subject to the law. Consent to what? Consent to keep the law. So if you do not sign your signature on the line saying, I will keep the law, the Ten Commandments, are you subject to that law?
No.
No. No. You are not subject to that law. Well, let's go on. Never keep that in mind. Sinners who were under the law. So now what Paul is saying is all are sinners. Sinners who were under the law. So how are you a sinner under the law as opposed to a sinner not subject to the law, or so not under the law? All are sinners. So are those sinners who are not subject to the law different than those sinners who are subject to the law? Because what is sin? Sin is transgression or breaking the law. Mm-hmm. Sin is breaking the law. So if you are not subject to the law, how can you break a law that you're not subject to? The only time you can break a law that you can break a law is that you have given your consent, your agreement to abide by the law, and then you break one of those laws. Because the laws are given as a complete whole. So all of the laws that you agreed to keep, you have to say, okay, in this case, there are 10 commands. Mm-hmm. When you agree to keep the commandments, you agree to keep them all or none at all. So if you break one, you have broken the...
You've broken the covenant. Right.
So... sinners who were under the law will have that law to judge them. Now, that is a fair statement. But how does one get under the law? Paul does not say that. What Paul says is, he's inferring, if you were born a Jew, you were born subject to the law.
Mm-hmm.
Which you could say may be true, but in Israel, the child that grew up would breach what was called the age of accountability. The age of the accountability, they were required to decide whether they were going to keep the law or not. Below that age, they weren't under the law. They become us. But it was the parents' responsibility to bring their child up to the point where when they reached the age of accountability, they would choose to keep the law. So it was still a choice by the individual to choose to keep the law, the Ten Commandments. Then Paul says, it is not listening to the law, but keeping it, that will make people holy. That is true. So you see how Paul and the devil who's using him weaves truth in like undulating motion of a serpent,
mm-hmm.
so that it makes the whole appear true. Unless you look at each line and what is being said. It is not listening to the law, but keeping it that will make people holy. That is a true statement.
Listen to what God told Daniel in Daniel 12:3 and 4, and then I'm going to also read Daniel 12:10. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky above of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Knowledge of what? Knowledge of righteousness. And then, in Daniel 12:10, many. Now listen to this, because this goes right along with what you've been talking about, and this confirms that what Paul wrote cannot be true. Daniel 12:10, many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined. But the wicked shall act wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But those who are wise shall understand. Think of that. The righteous lead other righteous to righteousness, and those people purify themselves and refine themselves with the information that is given to them. They understand their relationship to God through the covenant. Because what is righteousness? It's doing rightly. Doing rightly how? To whom? To what?
Well, and it boils down to this one brief statement. Those who prefer the lie over the truth are the wicked. Those who prefer the lie over the truth. So what does that statement mean? You have to have had the truth presented to you. You don't just naturally have the truth appear in your mind. It just does not happen that way. You have to have been presented the truth. And then you say, well, you know, I'm just going to stick with what I have because it's worked for me and it works for my family. And I have friends in church and my family. And
You obviously don't understand. I've said the sinner's prayer. I have put myself under the blood and under the robe of Christ's righteousness.
Which is nothing more than an extension of the same lie that they have been believing all along.
But you see, that's the truth to me.
Well, of course it's the truth to them.
You see.
Because who would say, well, I would rather believe a lie?
Yeah,
nobody will.
A lie is a lie.
But they end up believing a lie as if it is the truth without accountability. And you know what that is called? That is called faith.
And we have to go along here quick.
We've got two minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. For instance, this is verse 14. For instance, pagans who never heard of the law, but are led by reason. Do you see that word there, reason?
In this Bible, it says nature.
This one says instinctively.
Nature, instinct,
yeah.
Or reason. You remember reason was a big thing in France around 1798. Do you remember that? And they had the goddess of reason. Well, you've read about it. The goddess of reason. In fact, the goddess, a statue of the goddess of reason is standing
New York Harbor.
On Liberty Island.
Statue
in
the
New
statue
York
of
Harbor. Yeah. That is the statue of reason, the light and the book. It's the goddess of reason. Pagans who never heard the law are led by reason to do what the law commands. May not actually possess the law, but they can be said to be the law. Let me tell you something. If you never heard that you must keep the seventh day holy, how can you start keeping the seventh day holy when you've never heard of it? Does reason or instinct lead you to keep the seventh day holy because God sanctified it?
No.
It is impossible. That is an insidious lie that people will read right over and go, oh yeah, someone will know they're good just by being good.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thank you, Suzette. And thank you all for listening. We hope you will join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. Please go to the website at spiritoftruthministry.net for all sorts of good reading. And hopefully, and we pray that you will be with us tomorrow. So long for now.